Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 289. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Buenos dias.
And I figured I'd have a little mood music. Maybe we can sway back and forth as we talk about technology. I don't know. Anyway, Graham Thickens is and Phil Wilson, they're both off. They had other commitments today. And so we're going to miss them, but we'll think about them while we talk and maybe abuse them verbally.
If the opportunity presents itself.
Yes, or we make it. At any rate, the big story, top story here is this updated Target app, which pinpoints merchandise in the store. Is it going to shop for you, Julio?
Yeah, kind of. The technology behind this is from a company called Point Inside, which has made its mission to map indoor spaces the way Google maps outdoor spaces. So Target has teamed up with this Bellevue, Washington company so that the mapping of indoor stores is much more sophisticated than it was in the past. The app has a list function. If you type something like milk, it'll try to autocomplete. It'll ask if you want skim milk or almond milk or whatever. And then, you know, once you create a list item, the corresponding map on the app will create a little pin that'll show you exactly where that item is and, you know, how to get to it, what aisle it's in. So it's sort of indoor triangulation of the stuff that you're looking for, which is great because, you know, if I'm in a store that I'm not familiar with, I'm constantly asking people, you know, where is this, where is that? And I know with this app, I no longer need to do that at Target.
Well, is it, are they using beacons or how are they?
They are not using beacons.
It's all Wi-Fi based?
Yeah, it's a little tricky to grok. The app is not telling you where something is. It's telling you where something is supposed to be based on database information.
Got it.
So there's a very sophisticated, orderly database of Target products. And the database tells you this product is supposed to be at X location. There's a slight chance that it might not be. So you're not actually homing in on an actual product. You're homing in on the hypothetical assumption that the product you're looking for is at X location. Yeah, I asked Point Inside that very question, and they told me something interesting. They are actually experimenting extremely heavily with iBeacons, and they have some announcements along those lines for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you have to have faith that the Target database of product locations is accurate. And then you know Target is a very tidy company, so I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
So your story, Julio, and everything I've read so far in the retail trade magazines said that this is iOS only, but I opened up my Target app in my Android phone, and I see that at least the map function works. So that's good news. Maybe they're testing it.
And I've read in a couple of places that the Android app works with several dozen stores where they had been testing this capability, but not the full 1,801 Target store deployment. But I'm starting getting that secondhand, so don't quote me on that.
Yeah, no, it works in my Lakeville store, so they must be one of the test stores.
Yeah,
I still don't see the Black Friday stuff. Is that in the Android or the iPhone app? Where
yeah,
you can see the Black Friday list of what they have and where it's located.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go to a Target store and play with this, but I'm not sure they've turned that on yet. I think don't quote me on this, but this may be something that they turn on actual Black Friday when they decide, you know, where the pallets of doorbuster items are actually going to go.
Oh, yeah.
But on Black Friday, basically, you'll be looking for certain doorbuster items that you've read about, and then when you go to you have to actually step into the Target store for this capability to work, but once you're in the store, it'll tell you, okay, that $100 laptop is in X location, and you can sort of home in on it. And you can actually tap a button to highlight Black Friday items and disregard all others, which is kind of interesting.
So Point Inside, I'm assuming they work with other people, but is this feature sort of exclusive to Target for a while, or are there other retailers doing the similar kinds of things?
It's not exclusive to Target, and depending on which client they work with, it might have you know, more or less features. They work with Lowe's, and they work with a Midwestern grocery store chain, which I can't pronounce.
Meijer.
So they have a couple of other announced clients, and it's a specific technology that they are rolling out to use with retail partners. So they said they have more partner announcements to come. So it's not specifically a Target exclusive.
Yeah, but it's good to see that they're continuing to be innovative here in the mobile space.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, and I got to just tell you that our friend Paul DeBettings, Minnesota headhunter, ought to be going crazy because I've been reading all these articles about developers and programmers and how salaries are going up dramatically. And specifically around certain kinds of languages, Ruby on Rails, because of obviously web app creation and all of that. But it's stuff like this that everybody wants to get in the game, and they want to be able to connect with mobile users in new ways. And I think it's great.
Yeah, and then Target said we're just scratching the surface here that they have aggressive plans to increase the capabilities. That the features you're seeing here are just a start, and they have more announcements to come.
Yeah. Well, speaking of developers, another article, Tim, about the Nerdery.
Yeah, Kansas City.
Oh, geez.
So another week and another expansion.
Huh? Another 100 jobs.
Yeah, and it's downtown in Kansas City, which is good to see them revitalizing that part of the city.
Yeah, no kidding.
So yeah, it's good to see them continuing to expand. I don't think we'll continue to see a weekly announcement like this, but business must be booming for them.
Well, I would bet it is. I mean, again, to the point of there aren't enough developers out there, and there's all these acqui-hires going on, people trying to snag engineers. That the Nerdery's got to have plenty of opportunity in front of them.
Yeah, and their business is not just local either. So it's a national business. So it only makes sense that they're expanding in various other cities, be closer to customers and in a new business and that kind of stuff.
Did you live there one point in Kansas?
Nope, never did.
Okay, all right. For some reason, I thought you did.
Nope.
And Julio, you've been here pretty much all your life, right?
Yeah, I moved to Minnesota from Puerto Rico. I spent a couple of years in Illinois, but mostly Minnesota.
Okay.
My son, by the way, was in Kansas City, Missouri for a robotics championship not too long ago, and that was I believe downtown, and Tim, you apparently know the city better than I do. Downtown is not the greatest place in the world there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I've visited there many times because my in-laws live in Arkansas, so we drive through there at least once or twice a year. So
that's the impression I got from my wife and son who thought the downtown was a little bit sad.
Yeah, too bad.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though, Kansas City has the greatest freeway system in the world. They've got like 3 or 4 lane freeways everywhere because Bob Dole, you know, who was the Senate Majority Leader for years, that was his state. So they got a lot of highway money. I mean, there's like no traffic. It's just incredible.
Boink, boink.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Years ago, I used to work for a company called the Grocery Wagon, delivering groceries when I was in college. And I used to deliver groceries to these houses where it was pretty clear that these people were severe alcoholics.
Oh, okay.
And they didn't go out, and you know, there's booze bottles everywhere and that kind of thing. And so now it's going to be even easier to get your alcohol because of a new app called Drinkfly. I know I'm being facetious, you know, somewhat on this, but don't most people want to go and get what they want, and maybe browse? Or do you think that this is a big deal? Like, oh, geez, I've got people over at the house for the holidays and I need, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Drinkfly, these two brothers in Chicago who I can't say credit here. Or somebody else here in the newsroom said, "Oh, do you mean the Booze Brothers?" they created this app, and apparently they're not the only ones doing this. They created an app where you can order liquor on your phone, you know, using an interface. And to do that, they need to partner in different cities with liquor stores. So here in the Twin Cities, they've partnered with Liquor Vault in St. Paul and a couple of liquor stores in Minneapolis. And the trick here is those liquor stores already need to have delivery service. So liquor delivery is not new, but with these stores, you would have to order stuff on the phone previously. Mm-hmm. Now they've just layered on the digital capabilities. You can browse the full inventory of the store on your phone and then just place orders. And it's pretty cool. And they're doing a Jimmy John's kind of a thing where they guarantee delivery, you know, within the hour and so on and so forth. And in the winter when you don't want to slog out in the snow to buy stuff, you know, this is a convenience. You're right that a lot of people, you know, want to go to the store and browse, but some people know exactly what they want. So this is pretty handy. It's a little dangerous for me because I didn't used to drink alcohol, you know, at all, pretty much. And, you know, I've in recent years developed a taste for beer, and I've been kind of ramping up my alcohol consumption. So this can't help. This is kind of a dangerous thing.
So are there any St. Paul liquor stores that are signed up for this?
Yeah, Liquor Vault in downtown St. Paul.
Oh, okay.
I actually strolled over there and talked to Felix, the owner over there, and he said, you know, he's kind of tentative, you know, sort of cautiously bullish on it because he's already gotten, you know, a minor surge of orders. So it could be something that would work. The business model for Drinkfly is a bit risky. They're hoping that large liquor brands will buy advertising to display within the app because they are not charging the liquor stores fees. Or it's kind of a no lose proposition for the liquor stores. Whether that business model will be sustainable, it remains to be seen. Some of Drinkfly's competitors are taking a different tack. They're charging liquor stores, you know, monthly fees and so forth. So, and there's a lot of competition in this space. I've identified at least 7 different apps that are kind of doing the same thing, although wow. Drinkfly is the only one that is operating in the Twin Cities so far.
Well, what's the upcharge for delivery that, say, the Liquor Barn would charge? Or Liquor Vault, I mean, sorry.
Yeah, my understanding is zero. Each liquor store has its own policy. Like, for instance, Liquor Vault has a $5 delivery charge. A liquor store in Minneapolis that I talked to, they don't have a delivery charge, but you have to make a $10 minimum purchase. So my understanding is Drinkfly orders change nothing. Basically, if you place an order through Drinkfly, it goes to the liquor store. Once the liquor store gets the order by email, then everything at that point functions exactly as it did before. So there's no change.
So it's like an advertising thing for these liquor stores.
Exactly. So it's one of these interesting situations where a digital newcomer is basically trying to graft itself onto an existing commerce mechanism.
So I'm assuming that this is like a web app that the liquor store actually goes up and puts their inventory online.
Yeah, so basically the liquor store and Drinkfly, they have to collaborate so that Drinkfly gets regular updates of what precisely the store is selling. How they do that exactly, I don't know. But if you open Drinkfly and go to Liquor Vault, for instance, all of their stuff is right there. So that's kind of handy.
Huh. Nice. Yeah.
Interesting. Well,
I need to, before we talk about this next Minnesota story, is... bow for a moment and give my condolences to Tim and his Best Buy Death Watch.
Well, they were on the ropes there for a while.
Yeah, but boy, they of course, I think they set analysts up to blow past these expectations, but that's what the article's about, is how they blew past analyst expectations for the quarter, and shares of the company jumped sharply on the news.
Yeah, but they were actually trying to downplay the holiday quarter, though, which we're currently in, which they still have some challenges in, and you know, every retailer does, because the economy is you know, sputtering along here. So one of the things that they're trying to do is to extend the kind of the Black Friday season to, you know, to more than just one day.
Yeah.
So you know, hopefully that will tick some things up, but as we talked about before, you know, the 4K TVs are the big thing that's kind of hinging on their results for this quarter. There aren't any new game consoles or anything else that would, be upticks for them. So, and I just don't see a lot of people, maybe you're the only one, Steve, that would be in the market for a 4K TV set at this stage. So, I think they're probably smart by underplaying what might happen during the holidays.
Well, except though that 4K TVs, there's enough, there are several Black Friday deals on 4K TVs that are frankly about the same price as a good 1080p set.
Yeah.
And so, nobody's really raving about any of the 4K TVs, and the really big ones are very expensive. I mean, they're, $4,000 or $5,000 or more. And, I don't know. I think we'll be surprised that, there's two or three models that I've been looking at, that seem to be pretty aggressively priced at about, $1,200 to $1,500. And I think those things are going to move, because if you're going to buy a new TV,
might as well be 4K.
Yeah, why not get a 4K? I mean, it's clearly the trend. So
true, but there's not a lot of content out there for 4K yet. There's not.
Yeah, there's virtually none. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Netflix is the only thing I can think of. Is there anything else?
If you buy a Samsung or Sony TV, they'll also try to sell you this little storage module that has a crap load of 4K movies loaded on it. So it's kind of local storage, kind of a thing. Which is a sort of an end run around the online bandwidth issue, but once you burn through the stuff on that storage device, then you might have a problem.
Well, the only thing that I am concerned about is that the internet caps are starting to be enforced. I'm reading articles from around the country where Comcast down in the southeast started capping at 300 gigabytes. For the month, which, still is for most people not a big deal unless you're doing a lot of streaming. And so they're putting these caps on, and I'm sure they're going to have another option for, buying more bandwidth. I think it's like $10 a gig per month if you want to go over your allotted amount. But 4K TV, can you imagine? What kind of?
Oh, yeah. And that's where internet comes into play. So we're not sure when that's going to come on the scene. I got isn't in the show notes, but I got an interesting email from a University of Minnesota student who's about to graduate, and he wants to when he graduates, he wants to move to an address that will be served by CenturyLink gigabit internet, which supposedly is coming.
Yep.
And the email he sent me was very revealing, because he desperately tried to find out, where they're setting up gigabit internet, and nobody would tell him. It's a complete mystery, and his suspicion is that this is all a bunch of PR, and that they've announced gigabit internet, but they're not going to be rolling it out anytime soon. So gigabit internet is a very promising technology, but it's a frustrating thing. Because it's very, very difficult to ascertain, when and where you might be able to get it in the near future. Yeah.
Well, GigaOm did an article where they talked about fiber to the home and how costs have come down, but that the cost is about $5,000 per house. So, over here I've got fiber. I mean, I can look out my back window and I can see the box where the fiber drops to, but then to wire up each one of these homes would be $5,000 a home. And I'm not sure most people, they're doing email and, doing some surfing and, and all that kind of stuff. But how many people are streaming? And that's really where it's going to come into play. I think that'll drive demand, but, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, at some point, this is going to, 4K TVs and so forth are going to cause this whole thing to snowball, and we're going to sort of jump to the next, internet level. I'm not sure if that's, 5-10 years out. But gigabit internet, back to my point, gigabit internet is frustrating because at this point it's highly hypothetical, even though people are saying they're going to offer it.
Yep. Well, so Senator Al Franken, who's the chair of the Subcommittee on Privacy, Technology, and the Law, posted a letter that he sent to Uber CEO Travis, is it Kalanick?
Kalanick, yeah.
And about all the issues going on with Uber. And have you guys really been following this whole story?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So is this a kind of a PR stunt for the senator or what? Is he sort of piling on to this?
Sure.
Well,
he jumps on stuff like this.
Well, he's on the right subcommittee. He's on this subcommittee for, you know, privacy and so forth. So it's certainly within his bailiwick. But yeah, obviously he's a politician and he's grandstanding, but he's asking some legitimate questions. If, you know, to recap the whole Uber thing, an Uber executive got into trouble because he sort of floated a trial balloon at a party about how he had been thinking of creating an investigative unit to dig into the personal lives of problematic journalists, including Sarah Lacey of Pando Daily.
How about that guy that blogs for TwinCities.com?
That Julio guy?
That Julio guy, yeah.
Yeah, what about him?
Yeah. I don't think I'm on Uber's radar, but that was kind of creepy. And then there are allegations that Uber is misusing location data to sort of track, you know, certain people like journalists using their, I'm making air quotes here, their God view capability where, you know, you can tap into the data to see, you know, where a certain person has used an Uber car and where they went and so forth. So there are all these allegations floating around to the point where Uber is just getting a ton of grief over this.
Yeah.
And it's raising all these privacy implications. And so that's where I actually talked to Al Franken, and he told me that Uber had not been on his radar until these recent situations, but he sent a very detailed, very sharply worded letter, you know, asking questions, basically, you know, asking Uber, you know, what the heck is going on with you guys? And it is political grandstanding, but he's asking the questions that everybody else is asking, and sort of the fundamental underlying question is Uber being run by adolescents?
I know. Yeah.
It's nuts. And it's gotten to the point where I'm so creeped out by Uber that I deleted the app from my phone. I canceled the account. And I don't have to use Uber because I have a ton of alternatives. I can use Lyft. I can use Car2Go. I can use Curb. Not everybody is in my situation, but I have, you know, plenty of very, very good options. There's absolutely no reason I have to use Uber, and I'm not. And until I see a fundamental shift in how that company does its business, I'm not going to use them anymore.
Well, one thing that bothers me about the whole thing is both sides, both Lyft and Uber, seem to have been after each other and have resorted in the past anyway to dirty tricks. So this seems to me like a hit piece that's been blown out of proportion.
So the BuzzFeed story?
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. And the one thing that bothers me is Sarah Lacey, the Pando Daily journalist who was targeted.
Allegedly.
Well, it's confirmed that the executive at the party said these things about Sarah Lacey. So it's absolutely not in question. And in fact, Uber has apologized directly to her. But Sarah Lacey is a little bit like Alan Franken. She's jumped on this thing and grandstanded the hell out of it. Like, she hired security, bodyguards, and she said she feels scared, and it's like she's grandstanding too, because there's absolutely no indication that Uber is out hiring mercenaries, you know, to sort of rappel into her house and put a bullet through her forehead. So the whole Sarah Lacey angle is also kind of creepy, because she's taking advantage of this to basically drum up publicity for her site. And then you have the whole taxi lobby. Like, I keep getting these emails from, you know, the taxi lobby who desperately want to destroy Lyft and Uber. And I get these emails on a almost a daily basis, and they basically amount to a smear campaign where they're out to just, you know, Uber and Lyft. There's a role for these companies in our society, but the taxi lobby doesn't want to have it. They just want these people gone. And so it gets to the point where you just kind of look at the landscape here, and there's ugliness everywhere. Sarah Lacey is ugly. The taxi lobby is ugly. Uber and Lyft are ugly. The whole thing, the whole panorama just stinks to high heaven, and I hate it.
Well,
end of rant.
Were you a fan of the show X-Files by any chance?
I watched it a little bit, yeah.
I'm going to compete with you, Julio, for who's got the bigger tinfoil hat.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. There's so many plants of stories and so on. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So. But I just want to put a plug in for Car2Go, which is a service that I've grown extremely fond of, with the little smart cars that they sprinkle around town that you can swipe a card and get in and drive. I like that service because it's a service where I'm doing my own driving, and it's a service. The service is built in a way that sort of reduces this ugliness because it gives the user a lot more control.
Are they clean when you get in them?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
And what's more, I've noticed that if I go through little spurts of using them for several days in a row, they sort of figure out that I'm a user, and they start clustering cars near my house, which is really convenient. So
cool.
Yeah. Just like having my own personal little car fleet.
So do you ever take one over to the St. Paul Public Library? This story of yours about the library being on the forefront of digital learning and entertainment, I thought was really, you've been talking about this for some time, but
yeah, yeah.
But
yeah, the headline is a little overblown, but
yeah.
I'm a big fan of the St. Paul Public Library ever since it started setting itself up in such a way that I never have to go to the library. Like I never have time, and I really hate going to the library, looking for books, having to take a big backpack with me because I want to cram the backpack full of books that I have to schlep back home. I hate that whole thing to the point where in recent years, my reading basically took a huge dive because I hate to buy books. I hate to buy books because it's very expensive, but I also hate to schlep books from the library.
Mm-hmm.
So in recent years, I had not been doing a ton of reading. But then this library and many other libraries around the country started offering a couple of different services for checking out ebooks. You basically download an ebook for a limited amount of time. So no more schlepping to the library, but I have all this reading at my fingertips. Then they added Zinio, which lets you read top magazines in digital form.
Yep.
Treehouse, where you can take coding classes. And then the most recent thing is lynda.com, which is a very popular service that has a lot of video courses if you want to learn Photoshop or, you know, and so forth.
I got to tell you, that was huge. Now they're not licensed for too many users. It's 75 users. But for those of you listening, if you haven't gone to lynda.com, lynda.com, and looked at the courses that are there, I think you're going to be jaw dropped to see the quality of the content and everything, the depth and breadth of what they offer. It's just stunning. And to have access to that. Wow.
So how do they meter that out? Do you get it for like 14 days or something?
But.
Well, I think it's only going to run until November 18th.
Oh, okay. So it's a limited time.
It's a limited time frame and a limited number of people.
November 2017.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Oh my God. So, I didn't see. Duh. Yeah, it's right there in your article. The 2017. Wow.
And they meter it where lynda.com only lets 75 St. Paul Public Library patrons in at one time.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so that's how. Oh,
so it's first come, first served. So you get on in the morning, and if you're one of the first 75, you're in. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then if you can't get in, just try a little later. Yeah.
So if there's 100,000 library users and they all want to see a course at night, you know, only 75 of them are going to be able to get in.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's still a good deal. I mean, what is it, $25 a month or something like that for this, for Lynda?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what you get, but yeah.
There are different levels. Yeah.
It's a good way to sample it and to see if it's going to work for you, you know? I bet they sell a lot of subscriptions to it.
Like, for instance, I've been wanting to really brush up on my Final Cut Pro skills. And you can go in there and basically master Final Cut Pro, and it's fantastic.
You know what else? There's a guy named Bert Monroy, who I've been watching his stuff for years, and now he's exclusively on lynda.com. And there is no one better, I think, as a teacher of Photoshop than Bert Monroy.
I've heard of him.
Yeah. The guy is amazing.
Yep.
So just to have access to that alone.
And if there are any, like, Macworld.com fans in the audience, you've probably heard of Christopher Breen, who's a writer there, and he has a second career as a Lynda.com instructor. And I have to, he's also a bit of a ham, and I have to read this quote that he gave me for my story, which is hilarious. He said, "I would strongly urge your readers to click at least 7 times on any Lynda video that bears my name. A pleasant chocolate aroma results."
Yeah. For the truffles he's able to afford to buy from all the clicks.
Yeah, yeah.
How funny. That's great. Yeah, he is good. I like the way he explains things.
Yeah, Chris's brain is great.
Yeah.
And a talented musician as well.
He is?
Yeah, he is. He's in a little bit of a band. My fundamental excitement about what the library is doing is that you can literally, if you properly avail yourself of their digital services, you never have to leave your house and go over to a public library branch if you don't want to. But more fundamentally, you can get the equivalent of several college degrees just by availing yourself of their free digital offerings, and it's crazy.
Well, and you know what's great?
Yeah.
I mean, here we are at the holidays. We've had an early winter. You can use Drinkfly to get your booze, and then you can have something to do with going to the library digitally.
You can order Drinkfly and then peruse Final Cut Pro video, and then the next day when you're hungover, you say, "What was that video again? I'm going to have to watch that again."
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. Oh, my God. Well, anyway, we should chat about some of the big stories, just other big stories. You know, there it seems to be that things are slowing down a little bit, and usually the slipping stuff in on Friday doesn't seem to be happening quite as much as it has in years past. But, you know, after the stock market closes and the press has gone home for the weekend, and then the big story comes out, right? But we haven't seen a lot of that. But the first one here, this USA Freedom Act for NSA reforms voted down in the Senate. I expected it would be. What do you think, Tim?
I'm disappointed it was. It was, you know, a fairly close vote, but it was still fairly, you know, what wasn't the, it was within a what, 2 votes, I think, of ratification. So it's disappointing. And, you know, they're going to continue business as usual, collecting metadata on everybody, even if there's no suspicion, because maybe someday, you know, they'll be able to go back and use that data. So it's still, you know, it's just your personal freedoms being taken by the government, which is disappointing.
It is disappointing. But, you know, I thought was interesting, and now I'm trying to remember who said it this past week about how, the free market, the marketplace itself, and technology specifically around encryption needs to be made easier to use.
It's very difficult to use.
Look at what Glenn Greenwald went through when he was trying to figure out how to use all the stuff that Snowden was telling him to use so he could leak stuff to him.
PGP has always been a pain.
Yeah, I use GPG on the Mac.
Yeah.
And there's only 2 people that I ever encrypt stuff with. And one of the guys over in the Ukraine, he's got a Drupal WordPress coding shop. He was a PhD Carnegie Mellon grad and moved back to Kiev because it was home. And also he could make a ton of money working for U.S. companies and live like a god over there. But he's the only other one that uses encryption. So two people out of all the people I know, and it's just because it's just too damn hard. The market's got to, the market really has to make encryption easier. And you know, what I feel for law enforcement, because if I knew somebody was doing something and doing something bad, and it would take the life of the universe to decrypt what they've encrypted, I mean, that's not a good thing. But at the same time, you know, there's a reason that I put locks on my door and that I don't want, you know, the government to be able to have the cops walk in anytime or turn my webcam on or turn my phone on. And, you know, even though I haven't done anything wrong, let's just see what he's doing. So that's be nice if we had some teeth in the Constitution.
But you may have noticed that top companies are kind of buckling down on privacy and saying and telling the government this is not okay and sort of beefing up encryption and services like webmail and so forth.
To a certain degree, the
ease of use issue is taken out of users' hands because it becomes sort of automatic and transparent.
Well, I think that they have to protect their business. Cisco has their router business has dropped dramatically internationally because nobody trusts that there aren't hardware backdoors in the Cisco routers. And so Google's had the same issue, and obviously Apple cares deeply because they're trying to sell in China. And until this happened, you know, the whole iPhone or iOS security thing happened, they were facing the potential of the Chinese government outlawing sales of iOS devices in the country. And so that, you know, they have to protect their businesses. But at the same time, I have a sneaking suspicion that a lot of this is just kabuki theater. You know, it's just we're being sold a public bill of goods, and there's stuff going on behind the scenes that we just don't know about yet. So,
that you're paranoid or anything.
Nah, not me.
Yeah, I stuck this next story in, Steve, just for you.
Thanks, Tim.
The feds are coming to protect your Internet of Things.
Well,
don't you feel better?
Oh, sure.
Well, it is. Actually, you know what I feel good about is the fact that the industrial internet will Internet of Things will be handled, that there'll be security around that. Cause that's, you know, it's the infrastructure stuff that is a bad thing. I'm not too worried about my own network cause it's secure, but.
That the Chinese hackers can take down our utility grids.
Well, that's the danger.
That's the latest scare story that's being reported.
Yeah. So you know what? If you guys ran a defense company, if you ran Lockheed or Grumman or some big defense company, and the Cold War was over, and you had to figure out how to continue to get billions of dollars spent, isn't there nothing better than the boogeyman called terrorism? Or cybersecurity. It's this amorphous, hidden, unknown thing that we have to defend against. And so,
yeah, I don't think it's a defense industrial complex. It's more the government, and of course, all these defense contractors, you know, make money based on the government contracts they get.
Yeah.
But it's these government agencies, which are this enormous. The NSA is huge. You know, the Homeland Security Department is huge. All these, you know, these agencies, and they're vying for more and more and more money. So that's why they're continuing to report all of these things that are frightening, like Ebola and terrorism and whatnot, where the actual risk may not be as high as what they're you know, making it out to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a nonstop barrage of these kinds of stories. And so you get sort of, I don't know, you get sort of cynical, I guess.
Jaded, right.
You get jaded to these things. And you say, oh, geez, well, it's, you know, a good thing that all this terrorism is happening over in the Middle East when, you know, it could happen here again, but it hasn't, probably because, you know, we've been well protected for whatever the, you know, since 2001. So,
yeah.
But you know what scared what really scares the crap out of me? There's this. Listen to the last On the Radio on the Media podcast, they had a story about this guy who's setting up a library for how to set up a early 20th century society, like how to plow, and so forth, because he looked into history of solar flares, and periodically there are these huge flares from the sun that are basically capable of frying all of our technology. And yeah. I listened to that story and I was scared out of my pants, because basically we could have a flare that basically causes us to revert to medieval society. And so this guy is trying to set up a database where he caches this information that people can refer to, so that they can sort of bring society back to the 19th or the early 20th century.
Hey, there's another good Raspberry Pi application. You can make your own little headless server that has all this information on it.
So that
when it happens, yeah, maybe I'll start to collect these, all this information.
I got so scared. I said, hey, maybe I should create a cache of this stuff myself. So
well, it never can hurt, right?
Yeah.
Well, so Julio, don't go see Interstellar if this freaks you out.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, I desperately want to see that movie. My wife and son went to see it yesterday, but I didn't have time. And I love dystopian science fiction. It's my favorite.
Well, so the whole thing about electromagnetic radiation from solar flares, I've been reading about this stuff for probably the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the whole sunspots go wild kind of thing, right? That yep. solar flares yep. are heading to Earth and it'll knock us back to 5,000 BC and, so on and so forth. And, thankfully it hasn't happened yet. But then, of course, people have pointed out, because I've had these discussions, we were at a dinner party one night, we were talking about this, and one of the guys at the party goes, yeah, but, Mars used to have an atmosphere. It's gone. So, okay. Other things can happen. We just don't know. But yeah. Anyway, I'm probably less concerned about that than, man-made sorts of things. But anyway, hey, you were following, Aereo, right? Julio, pretty closely.
Was, yeah.
And so what do you think about their announcement that they're going to go chapter 11 or is it chapter 7?
Well, no, it's
chapter 11, yeah.
Well, it's really, really sad because I had actually used the service for a little while on a media test basis, where you can basically rent one of their little antennas and their little antenna array and sort of get over the air television with one of their antennas instead of having to set up your own and having the whole DVR capability and so forth. And It was an incredibly convenient little service, and I'm of the belief that this is something that people want and that is useful and lawful. And the fact that the entire industry, the entire TV industry turned against them, and the government ruled against them. It's all extremely sad, tragic kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And the irony is that something like this is eventually going to become prevalent and common. They were just a little ahead of their time. It's crazy. And you can sort of condense the chronology of all this, to just a few sentences as follows. Aereo saying, okay, we have this service and that's going to compete with the cable companies. And then the government says, "Oh no, you can't." Then Aereo says, "Okay, fine. We'll classify ourselves as a cable company and play by the rules." And then everybody turns around and says, "No, you can't. We want you to die. You have to die. Die, yeah. Die, die." And it's crazy.
Well, TiVo has a solution that lets you DVR off the air.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also, I know the Apple TV does. Tim, probably the Roku, where you can use the live streaming through Bloomberg and CBS now. I'm not sure about ABC, but more and more of them are offering live streaming through the app itself.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if that is really what the ultimate solution will be.
No, I think there will be an over-the-top cable company that will, deliver the kinds of shows that you get through your local cable provider, but through a set-top box or an app. And it'll be attractive to a lot of people for the same reasons that Aereo was, where, you know, it's difficult for regular people to watch live television on a mobile device. I mean, we can all get sling boxes and other kinds of technical solutions, which are complicated to do that kind of thing. But Aereo just made it very dumb simple.
My greater fear is that at some point, you know, the cable companies, they won't tell you this, but they hate the fact that pristine, high definition, free television over the air even exists. They want that to go away. And my fear is that at some point they might persuade the government to agree with them and sort of set up a rolling snowball where they start to chip away at this to the point where this eventually gets taken away and everybody's forced to pay for TV. That is kind of my long range fear, and I think that's distinctly possible because at one point, for instance, the cable companies by law were required to offer unencrypted equivalent access to all the over-the-air channels, you know, via cable. So you could basically jack into the wall, and with the right equipment, like a properly equipped TV, you could sniff out these channels and watch them in high definition for free. And the cable companies at a certain point persuaded the feds to let them turn that off.
It's when they made the transition to digital.
Yeah, at some point you could either get stuff over the air, or if you were a cable subscriber, you could pay very, very little, just jack into the wall and get the same channels for free. Now you can't do that. That's gone.
Right.
And very few people know about that. But I think that's just symptomatic of the cable companies basically trying to eliminate things that that prevent people from having to spend money on their services. And this is all very concerning for me in the long term, because over the air television, you kind of assume it's always going to be there, but I don't make that assumption. I think the TV industrial complex is itching for that to be taken away so that people will have to pay for their services.
Well, hopefully not, but we'll see. But there will be some competition from an over-the-top internet-based cable company. It just won't be Aereo.
Correct.
Yep.
All right, Julio, you have to tell us about your gadget stuff. And have you tried the Nexus 6?
I haven't. I've been having a little trouble getting Google to send me one, which is annoying because they usually send me stuff with regularity. I have a Nexus 9 tablet coming in shortly, so I'm kind of excited to see that. I've been playing with the latest Samsung phablet, the Note 4, which is nice. Sony has an Xperia phablet out, which is very nice. So, like, if you're in a PlayStation family household, it's kind of amusing to pick up this phone because it's very Sony complete with the little wavy interface and so forth. There are a lot of really, really, really good phones out there. It's almost hard to buy a bad phone these days. I played with the HTC One M8, beautiful, beautiful phone. The LG G3, another gorgeous phone. And we're getting to the point where the market has matured to the point where it's, you know, you could basically put on a blindfold and throw a dart and buy a fabulous phone. There's a lot of good stuff out there.
Well, what I think is interesting is even in the mid-range, like the Moto G for what, a couple $100 is a fantastic deal.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
So you're even seeing, you know, at the kind of the mid or lower end, you're seeing very, very good quality, at least in Android phones these days.
Yeah, and the latest Android update Lollipop is great. So we finally reached the point where Android has achieved full parity with the iOS side, and which is fabulous because it's great for consumers to have choice. At one point, you'll recall the iPhone was the only decent smartphone out there, and everything else was garbage.
Right.
And we're no longer at that point in time, which should be concerning for Apple, but it's great for the consumer.
So what's your opinion of all these wearables, the Moto 360, and now LG, I think, has a new circular Android Wear watch. Do you think these things are going to catch on, or do you think it's just kind of a niche?
I don't know. I don't know if this is going to go anywhere. It's definitely not going to go anywhere in its current form. The Moto 360, I don't know if you've actually seen it. It's huge. It's a gigantic device. And it's like, do I really want to put that on my wrist? The other device that's kind of interesting is the Microsoft Band, which is not a smartwatch per se. It's more of a fitness. It's sort of a hybrid fitness band with some smartwatch capabilities built into it. And Microsoft sent me one to play with, and it's an interesting device because you can, you know, you get your messages, you get your email on it, notifications on it, and so forth. You can even pay for your lattes at Starbucks with it. But the problem with it is it's very uncomfortable. It's like you're like a cop slap handcuffs on your wrist.
Yeah.
It feels terrible, and it's not flush to your wrist, but it sort of hovers around your wrist, and it's sort of big, so you can't button your shirt or get a sweater sleeve over it. And the screen, the way the screen is positioned, it makes it almost impossible for you to use it with the screen at the top of your wrist, because when you look at your wrist, you're actually looking at it sideways. It works fine if you wear it on the underside of your wrist, and that's okay. But you know who really does that? Go ahead.
I tried it out at the the Microsoft store at the Mall of America last week. And I would be one that would wear it that way, not only because it's, you know, it's easier to read that way, but I would wear it on my opposite hand because I do wear a watch, you know, a traditional mm-hmm. watch, and this wouldn't replace my watch.
And Microsoft says that. Microsoft says it's not intended to replace your watch.
Right, right.
So you're exactly the right. And if you're a nerd like me, you'll recall when the Star Trek, the motion picture came out, James Tiberius Kirk wore his wrist communicator that way with the screen on the underside. So you can be James Kirk. But
boy, that movie though was really, really slow, didn't you think?
Yeah, I agree.
I haven't watched that in years. I'll have to do it. But I remember we went to the theater because it was a big event, of course, because they hadn't been on since the 60s. And we went there and it's like this long and plodding deal. And God. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, anyway.
Well, that's because we all wanted to see the ship, right?
Yeah, I know, but then Star Trek 2 comes on, and it's a great movie, you know?
Yeah.
I never forget the face.
Well, we should, I think we need to redub this month Black November, because it's no longer Black Friday, to your point earlier, Tim.
Black Thursday.
Oh my God! Well, no, it's like black now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There are deals. That's for sure. Yeah. I think it's more confusing than it was in the past, where you always knew it was going to be on the Friday after Thanksgiving, and sometimes you had to get there at 2 and 3 in the morning and wait in frozen lines. And now, you know, with online and with their extending the sales, I don't know when the best time to get the best deal is, you know?
Well, I don't either. And in fact, now that I put a link in here for The Verge, Black Friday and Cyber Monday 2014, all the best deals in one place. Now, these are all technology deals, but one of their updates was Walmart's Cyber Monday deal includes a $998 4K Samsung TV.
There you go, Steve.
$1,000. I mean,
I know, but it's probably not as big as you want, though.
No, of course not. But still.
And be careful, those budget 4K TVs, as I understand, their pictures aren't the greatest.
Well, on the Vizio, that's true. On the Samsung, it actually gets pretty good reviews. This one's a 55-inch.
55-inch, that's pretty respectable.
At 240 hertz, so the refresh rate's pretty fast. I would not buy anything less than a 240 hertz refresh rate TV. because it really makes a huge difference, especially if you watch sports at all. Not that I do, but you know, anything with a lot of movement.
I don't know that buying a 4K TV this year is a good idea. This is all first generation stuff.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. But do you guys have any pent up demand for anything? I
don't. I have my old Samsung 1080p HD TV with Google TV functionality built into it. I love it to death. I almost want to hug it every day, and I just have no interest in upgrading my TV. I go to Best Buy, and I look at their huge, you know, 60-ish inch 4K TVs, and they're showing the sort of the test footage of Alaska or whatever. And I stand there and I'm mesmerized, and it's amazing, and I can't believe it. But then I leave the store, and it's like, no, I don't really want to buy that. So I'm fine. I don't know about other people, but the current TV that I have is perfectly fine. I'm probably going to be using it for another 5 years.
Yeah.
So
does
yeah.
it? How does it hug you back?
It doesn't. that's the problem. I get no reciprocity there.
Oh man.
Yeah, I don't know. I always like to pick up movies because they're, you know, they've got $2 and $3 deals on movies. So that's about the only thing that I'll probably pick up. Although there is a barbecue. I need a new barbecue. So there's one at Walmart that looks like it's a pretty good deal.
Oh, get a what is it called? The Big Green Egg.
Yeah, those things are like super expensive though.
Yeah, but if you want my understanding is if you want the best, that's the best.
Yeah, well, Jamie Fingelstead, you guys know Jamie, right? Yeah. He's the CTO at SPS Commerce now, entrepreneur. He has a Big Green Egg that he always tweets about or posts about and all that, and he makes all kinds of stuff in there, you know, full turkeys or hams or whatever, and everybody just raves about how this stuff tastes coming out of that thing.
But I shouldn't talk because I've never literally never grilled. My wife and I, we bought a grill a few years ago, and it's still in the box in the garage. We haven't unboxed it, so we're not grilling people.
Well, if you're interested in Black Friday deals, blackfriday.com is the place to go. It's got all, you know, basically they claim they've got every ad by every major retailer and manufacturer and all of that. And it's kind of a one-stop shop for items. And so I've been trolling that a little bit.
Blackfriday.com, did you say?
Blackfriday.com. Yeah.
And bfads.net is another good one. They've been around for years. Blackfriday.com is fairly new to the game.
Yeah. Well, we'll put these links in the show notes for everybody. Mm-hmm. So we're going to skip the security tip of the week because we're running out of time. But is there any cool things of the week that anybody wants to? Tim, do you want to talk about?
Sure. What the heck? I will get this this one rolling. And this is something I saw this week that I think that Julio is going to be all over when this thing comes out. And it's called the Hemingrite.
Oh, cool.
Okay, and I found this in a Raspberry Pi form because it's actually running a Raspberry Pi, but for a screen, it has a 6-inch e-ink screen similar to the one that is in the Kindle.
The Kindle, yeah.
And this is basically a updated version of the Tandy 100, which used to be the gold standard for journalists traveling.
Oh yeah, we have one of those here.
Right. So it's basically a keyboard. It's got a nice retro style. It's got this e-ink screen, Raspberry Pi. So it runs on batteries for literally weeks. What do they say in their thing? 6 weeks battery life.
Huh.
Right? And you can store everything there. But it also has a Wi-Fi connection to Google Docs and Dropbox, I want to say. Evernote and Google Docs. Mm-hmm. So basically you store your text data, and it backs up to the cloud when you're within a Wi-Fi hotspot and turn on the Wi-Fi. But it's basically just for writing. So it's a distraction-free writing keyboard thing. So I just thought it's the coolest thing I've seen this week.
Huh.
And no, they're kind of teasing us right now. So there's no no price yet, but if you want to check it out, we'll have the link in the show notes. Mm. But you've got to want one of these, Julio, right?
Oh yeah, I'm salivating.
Well, Julio, do you have anything that sticks out for you that?
Well, a couple of things. Tim's pick made me think of an app called Byword that I think if people who do a lot of writing on their iOS devices, they should really take a look at Byword, which is among a number of distraction-free apps. But Byword, I think, is kind of special because it's available for both the Mac and iOS. But second, it happens to also be a blogging app because, in addition to being a distraction-free writing app with Markdown, which is kind of a writing method that a lot of people like, but it also has hooks into WordPress, Tumblr, Evernote. So basically, if you set it up a certain way, you can actually be composing blog posts and then push a button.
Oh, cool!
And it goes right up. There are a lot of apps for blog posting, but a lot of them are kind of intricate. Marge edit is a little on the complicated side, but this is just a very beautiful, very simple little app that also happens, to post to your WordPress blog and so forth. And I really like it. I was traveling recently and I had an idea for a blog post and I yanked out my iPad with my keyboard and banged it out. And as soon as I hit the airport and I had Wi-Fi, I pushed a button, pushed it up to my blog, and it's great. I love it. The other cool thing that I want to point people to is the Polaroid. Have you heard of the Polaroid Cube? It's
Is that the thing that attaches to your phone?
No, the Polaroid Cube is a tiny. It's not. It's sort of GoPro-ish, but it's basically for the mass. It's basically a simple little GoPro-like camera for the masses. It's this little cube. It almost looks like something you would be, like a dice that you would be using in Vegas. But it's basically this little cube, little video camera. It has the camera lens on the front. On the bottom, it has a magnet so you can stick it to metal surfaces. It comes with a bunch of attachments that lets you, put it on your bicycle [S2] Cool. [S1] Handlebars or on your helmet. There's a little waterproof case for it. There's a little attachment if you want to put it on a tripod. Just this tiny, the people look at pictures of it and they kind of shrug because they're not really understanding the size. It's very tiny, but when people see it physically, this little tiny little video camera that you're holding with two fingers, it's an adorable little thing. It's very handy. Doesn't take the best high quality video in the world, but it's very cheap. Very cool, very colorful, very cute.
Records on an SD card, and then they've got a bunch of tripods. They got a helmet mount, something they call the monkey stand that you can wrap around stuff, a bike mount, a waterproof case. That's very cool. How much are they?
You got me there. I don't remember. I think it's $100.
$99.99.
Okay, yeah. Got it.
I'm sure someone has these on Black Friday for less.
Yeah. And I can't think of a better Christmas gift for anybody, for kids, for adults. It's fantastic.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my cool thing of the week is my tinfoil hat security time. Brian Krebs, the guy that broke the story of Target, just released a book called Spam Nation, the inside story of organized cybercrime from global epidemic to your front door. And this is the guy that got swatted by somebody. They sent the SWAT team to his house and all this different stuff. And he's had threats on his life and so on. I got the book yesterday. I cracked it last night and I'm already halfway through it. I can't put it down.
I have it, yeah.
Do you? Did you get it? Yeah, I absolutely loved it. So that's my cool thing of the week.
That book disappoints me in one regard, though. Krebs is the guy who broke the story about the Target breach.
Yeah.
And I was hugely disappointed because the book has only one extremely passing reference to the Target breach, and that's it. I was disappointed because I was hoping the book would get into that in a little bit of detail, but no.
Now, don't tell me how it ends. Just kidding.
No, Target. Sorry.
All right. Okay. In terms of events and stuff, there's really, again, there's not much happening this time of year, other than we'll start to see some holiday parties happening, but that's pretty much it. TIES, the Education Technology Conference, is December 6th. Mobile 10, Twin Cities on the 8th, and that's pretty much it in terms of stuff coming up.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, Julio, thank you for being on, and we will talk to everybody next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Yep. See ya.